At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Come on! Welcome to Money Savage, a Savage Approach to Personal Finance. This is George Grumbacher, and the time is right. Welcome to today's guest, strong and powerful Paul Hayes. Paul, are you ready to do this?
Sure. Looking forward to it.
Excellent. Let's do this. Paul is a writer and lecturer, as well as the owner and principal of investorship.com, and he's the author of Spending Your Way to Wealth. I'm excited to have you on. Paul, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Well, I fall in the category of being a senior citizen. I retired from active activity as a financial advisor about 20 years ago. Huh? And I've spent the last 20 years thinking about how people go about investing, some of the things that they do that is so right, and some of the things we do that we could probably do better if we took a little more time to think about how to invest rather than always focusing on what to invest in. When I retired, I commenced what now is a 20-year collaborative relationship with a personality psychologist who was introduced to me as one of the top personality psychologists in the nation, Ron Smith, a faculty member at the University of Washington, where he has authored numerous books on the subject of psychology that have been used in universities throughout the English-speaking world. And he was also recently the director of the University of Washington's clinical psychology department. So a man of great insights into how the mind works. And we collaborated and we put together a working seminar on how people think about making financial decisions. And it was open to the idea that people can enhance their behavior if they understand more about themselves. And it's often said that, if you don't know who you are, Wall Street's a horribly expensive place to learn. And that's very true, but our focus was on understanding, you know, the whole thought process. And it was at a time that the world was sort of waking up to Daniel Kahneman, the Nobel Prize winning psychologist who wrote the book Thinking Fast and Slow. And his work was pivotal in terms of causing economists throughout the world to realize that the way they thought about financial decision making up until Kahneman introduced them to some new information had been pretty limited. Economists tend to think that thought that people would gather, these are economists, would gather all of the relevant information they could if they were going to make a financial decision, and then they would weigh it based on its importance. And with that proper weighting and the information they had, they'd make a decision. And Kahneman basically introduced about 30 years worth of work that he and Amos Tversky, a psychologist at Stanford, and Kahneman had been at the University of California at Berkeley. They basically said, well, the model that the economists are using failed to take into account that individuals are people and we all tend to allow our emotions to creep into our decisions. And that awareness of the role that emotion played caused the economic model to be flawed. And it was like a giant light switch came on for economists. They realized that this was absolutely true, that they had overlooked the heavy weighting that they needed to give to the reality that people allow their emotions to corrode their judgment. So that became the basis for the work that Ron and I did together. And we put on seminars for individuals, but also for corporations and institutions, and focusing on that aspect of human nature. What is it about us that causes us at times to be so brilliant and yet at times do such stupid things that we look back with hindsight and slap ourselves on the side of the head. So after 20 years of working in that field, I decided, you know, that the message needed to reach people in a little different way. It needed to be put together in a book that was fun to read. It allowed us to gain some greater insights into ourselves. And that was the genesis of Thinking Your Way or spending your way to wealth. And it's just that. We start off the book, start off talking to people about an example of how normal we are, because we all tend to fall in that category of being pretty normal. But it's that normal aspect of us that gets us in trouble. An example would be a bat and a ball that cost together $1.10, but the bat costs $1 more than the ball. So the question is, how much does the ball cost? And it's so evident by the question, if the bat and ball together cost $1.10 and the bat costs $1 more, the ball must cost 10 cents. And almost always that's the answer that people come up with, that the ball is 10 cents. So normal people, like most of us are, conclude erroneously that the ball costs 10 cents, but it can't. If the bat costs $1 more than a 10-cent ball, that makes the bat cost $1.10. And if you add a 10-cent ball to $1.10 bat, you have $1.20. But the question started off with the two costing $1.10. So the answer that's almost always first and foremost in people's mind, and the answer that people tend to blurt out when asked, is wrong. And why is that? Well, it's because we're normal. That's the way our brain works. That's the way we think. It's intuitive. It's normal. It's quick. We don't have to think about it. We just know it. But with that quick stop and reflect, does it cost a dollar? Does it cost 10 cents? And that little bit of back checking is basically the time spent just thinking about things before we react. So it's kind of thinking fast and slow, as Kahneman talks about in his book. He talks about system one in the brain as being the intuitive part of the brain. It's the part of the brain that allows us to know instantly that 2 and 2 is 4. You don't have to think about it. We just know it. But if 37 times 28 is asked, it takes a little time. You have to stop and reflect. You may even have to get out a pencil and paper to do it and come up with the answer. We know we can do it, but we know it takes some energy. And by nature, we're kind of lazy people because we have to reserve energy in case we have to fly or have to run from a situation. So it's knowing when to stop and think, and it's knowing when to react. We need both parts of the brain. We need to be able to react very quickly to save our life at times, but we also need to slow down and think about things more deeply. So spinning your way to wealth is just kind of that in a nutshell. It's giving examples that are concrete examples of how normal we are and yet how wrong that normal tendency can cause us to be. It's a fun thing to think about, and we don't, as a general rule, take enough time to think. It's probably the shortcoming that we have as people. You're so busy and so preoccupied with life that taking the time to really think about things is important. And we spend so much time trying to think what to invest in and what's the next great opportunity, rather than stopping to think that it's kind of how we go about it. It's that deliberative part of our decision. It's not being reactive when we don't need to be reactive, when we shouldn't be reactive. So that's kind of what I'm about. And it's really fun to talk to people and a little bit of time spent just thinking about how we think. Metacognition, as a psychologist would call it. But it's an eye-opener in terms of how we can do things better. Slow down. Don't allow yourself to let your emotions corrode your judgment.
Right.
The markets are up and down. We've seen that in spades in the last couple of months. But that's really not new. That's been an ongoing phenomenon with financial markets forever.
Sure. We are too busy to be thinking, Paul, these days. I tell you, too much, too many things to occupy our attention and too many shiny new fun things to be looking at. But I think you're 100% right. And it's fascinating that economists have failed for so long to take into account the fact that people are people, to your point. And do you think that it's obviously a pretty important thing just to let people know, hey, you are not broken. You are like me and like so many other people, that this is just the way that we're wired. And so now that you know that, let's start doing some positive things about it.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I start off the book with 5 very simple questions that I ask people. That bat and the ball is one of them, but they're those kinds of questions that people can answer quickly and then stop and reflect on the fact that they answer them quickly incorrectly. And that's sort of an eye-opener to people because it points out the fact that, yeah, we're normal. That's a normal tendency. That's a normal answer, but it's wrong. So if we can be more aware of our fallacies there and our tendency to do that, why is it we feel sometimes like we have to act so quickly? What motivates us to make a rapid decision? If you're in a classroom, it's always interesting when I talk to a large group of people, I'll ask a question and a lot of hands will go up very quickly. But it's real interesting to note that a lot of the hands that go up quickly are hoping people are, that are hoping they won't get called on because they don't know the answer, but they wanted to appear smart and get their hand up before anybody else could.
I've been guilty of that.
Well, we all are. I mean, if you take your time to answer a simple question, you appear to be not very bright, maybe. And we're so interested in our self-esteem or preserving our self-esteem that we allow that motivation to get in the way of a higher motivation, and that is to get it right. That's, again, it's just kind of who we are.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I enjoy doing is pointing out the enormous benefit or the enormous reward that can do it, that can come as a result of doing some very small things. And we all know this. We all know that when we reach in our pocket to buy the $4 latte or something, that it's only $4 and it's something we really enjoy. And we have to enjoy life. We have to indulge ourselves at times. But we have to be able to limit maybe how many times we enjoy a latte during the day. I use an example of a young person who buys a couple of lattes a day and doesn't think anything about it because the change is there. It's in his pocket or her pocket or her purse. The latte is maybe only $3.50 or $4 a day, but over the course of a lifetime, if you adjust that latte expense for inflation, you come away with maybe $100,000+ spent on the latte during a person's normal working lifespan. But if that same money went into the second latte, you don't go without the latte if you enjoy it. But if the second one was maybe more unnecessary than it really seemed at the time, had gone into an S&P index fund, just a low-fee, non-load fund. It's sort of a proxy for what American businesses have done over time. About $1,300,000 of forfeited wealth. So it's not just the amount of money somebody could have if they modified their behavior slightly. It's how much they forfeit by not slowing down and giving some thought to not just spending versus saving, which is a bad way to look at it, in my opinion. It causes us to pit them as polar opposites, which they aren't. We spend everything we have. If we can start from that premise and just reflect on the accuracy of that, you know, assuming we don't just give our money away or bury it in a tin can in the backyard or put it under a mattress, we do spend everything we have. We may spend it when we put it in the bank, but it's spent. If we buy treasury bonds or municipal bonds or mutual funds, we're spending the money. So let's just recognize that and then give some thought to the fact that if we reallocate what we spend and we allocate more of our money in the direction of things that have future value instead of no future financial value, that money that gets reallocated can make the difference between being very, very financially secure in life versus having a lot of regret. The last chapter of the book is a very short chapter. It's not even called a chapter number. It's just the final chapter. And simply stated, the final chapter is spending can be the cause of future wealth, or spending can be the cause of enormous wealth forfeiture and in regret. Your choice.
Damn.
And
amen.
So what we need to do is stop. And every time we make an expenditure, we need to think of the long-term consequence. Not just spending money, but spending anything, spending our time. Are we spending our time in a productive way?
Mm.
Will it have long-term benefits? Will it create a wealth of great memories, which is an important wealth to have? Maybe a wealth of integrity by spending time doing something worthwhile, or a wealth of knowledge by spending our time being educated. Because the book, Spending Your Way to Wealth, conjures up the idea that it's all about money. but it really isn't. Wealth is an abundance of something of value. It can be a valuable thing, something other than money. And spending is just an exchange of one thing of value for something else of greater perceived value. It doesn't have to be money. So it's not just a book about money. It's a book about having a portfolio of diversified wealth, plural. And that's a term people aren't accustomed to seeing. In fact, if you look it up in the dictionary, you almost always find it talked about as wealth as a singular. But our goal in life needs to have a whole series of wealth associated with them, a wealth of integrity, a wealth of great memories, a wealth of decency, a wealth of generosity. And, oh, yeah, a sufficient level of financial wealth to be able to do the things we need to do and want to do.
Oh, yeah,
that's kind of a philosophy.
Yeah, I love it. That's so important right there, Paul, talking about wealth is an abundance of something of value. And yes, we do oftentimes, I know I do, just think about it in terms of money or investments, but you're right. It can be so many other things. Certainly time and attention and gratitude and all of those things. So being able to frame it in that way, I think is something that people can really, really get their arms around. And if you can train them, or if we can help people to be more mindful of making those decisions about spending, how am I going to spend this $5? How am I going to spend this 20 minutes? How am I going to spend, you know, my attention? Am I going to read? Am I going to scroll through social media? Am I going to go on the internet? All important decisions, which will lead to your overall wealth.
Yeah, you got it. That's, it's just slowing down and thinking about what's important in life and realizing that if all we have at the end of the day is a wealth of great memories and we go to the grocery store, the clerk says it'll be $68 for your basket of groceries, and you look him in the eye or her in the eye and say, you know, I've got a wealth of great memories. The clerk repeats the fact, it's $68, please.
I think that's great. Well, perfect. Well, Paul, Savage Nation is ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for them?
Well, I guess the tip would be to slow down, calm down, think more about what it is you're about to do, and think about the long-term consequences of everything you spend. But when you spend money, make sure every decision on how to spend is greeted with the thought, how do I want to allocate this spending? Am I allocating it in a way that's going to satisfy an emotional need or a psychic need? Or am I spending it in a way that's going to have some long-term favorable consequences, financial and otherwise? But we spend so much time spending. It's one of America's great pastimes. You know, we do it for entertainment. We do it for emotional stimulation. We do it for ego satisfaction. I guess the tip would be recognize what's motivating you and make sure you're being motivated to do the right thing for the right reason. If you're doing something because it's going to increase your self-esteem, maybe you want to rethink that. Maybe you can lower that self-esteem motive to a lower level. Maslow's list or hierarchy of needs has self-esteem quite a ways up on that pyramid. But in reality, it preempts an awful lot of the needs that are greater at the lower level. So just kind of uncouple yourself from yourself and think about, am I being motivated to do the right thing? Am I buying a lottery ticket because I really think this is going to be the ticket to retirement? Or do I get an emotional kind of entertainment kick out of it? And if I'm doing it because I find it sort of entertaining, or I like the idea of having something to look forward to the possibility of, then buy a latte ticket or buy a lottery ticket. But don't buy 20 of them, and don't frequent them so frequently that your retirement fund suffers as a result of your constantly spending money with hope. It's probably a false hope because the probability of success is so low. And become a probabilist, which is an interesting term that's kind of a fun word to say. But think about the probability of what you do. You know, when we get in the car to drive to the store to get a quart of milk, we don't stop and think about the possibility that we're going to be killed in the car accident doing that. It's a possibility, but we dismiss it, and we probably should, because the probability is so low. But when we make any decision, stop and consider, what's the probability of this being a good decision? And we're capable of being much better probabilistic thinkers than we give ourselves credit for. We just sort of intuitively think we know what the probability is. But if we know that the probability of something we're going to spend money on, of having that have greater value in the future, financial value, then maybe we want to do a little less of that and do things that have a greater probability of financial future value. The funding for the $68 grocery cart.
Well, I think that is great stuff. That definitely gets come on. There's a lot of great stuff in there, Paul. I particularly like the notion of how much time are you spending. I think that's a really great way to think about it. So, well, Paul, thank you so much for coming on. Where can Savage Nation learn more about you? Where can they get a copy of the book?
Well, start by going to investorship.com, which is a new word, but it's a word that describes a philosophy, and it's that philosophy that guides a person's thinking when they spend. And so at investorship.com, we'll give you some background on the book. It's got hot links into Barnes & Noble and Amazon and the bookstores that you can find the book in. And it'll give you some more background on me. I'm not trying to sell anything anymore. I put some what I thought of creative thoughts into the book, some things that I think can be helpful. And I think if somebody will take the time to read it, they'll not only hopefully enjoy it, but they'll get some guidelines and some thoughts that probably are a little different than they've seen elsewhere. Tried to work or put things in different perspective and cause us to think about things that we may think we know a lot about, and maybe we do, but we may not think about them the way that we could. And if we thought about things a little differently, we might do things differently. And if we did things a little differently, we'd probably get different results. And hopefully those results will be long-term, more success financially as otherwise.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, Savage Nation, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Paul your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to investorship.com, pick up a copy of Spending Your Way to Wealth and all the other great resources that Paul has put the time into creating. Thank you again, Paul.
Thank you, and have a great day.
You as well. And until next time, keep fighting the good fight, because we are all in this together. Spending too much time on social? Is your daily screen time over 2 hours? Are you a little bit overweight? Not saving enough money? Any or all of these are familiar. Strive could be for you. The Strive 2-week online boot camp will help you to detox your mind, body, and money, getting you on your way to a happier, healthier, wealthier, and more confident life. Go to strivedetox.com, strivedetox.com, and get your mind, body, and money right.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Bye-bye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.